Listen to the voices of our world.
Prison teaches you to shut down emotionally. Prison teaches you to stay by yourself.
It's really the first chance that you as a prison inmate have the opportunity to give back.
Puppies Behind Bars allows them to open up emotionally.
To give to somebody that you don't know and that you will never know. And you do it because you want to help someone.
Everybody wins in this situation.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. It's just an opinion, but I've often thought that the old maxim about killing two birds with one stone is a fairly gory way to go about expressing something positive. So you bet I prefer the more current phrase, win-win. And not coincidentally, today we're going to bring you... I'm coming to that. An exceptional win-win story. I know. Coming up, a look at an organization that trains prison inmates to raise puppies to become guide dogs for the blind and explosive detection canines for law enforcement. See? You'll hear from Gloria Gilbert Stoga, founder and president of Puppies Behind Bars, and from a former inmate at Bedford Hills Correctional Facility and puppy raiser, Susan Hallett.
How much is that doggy in the window?
You're walking down the street and you see up ahead, walking toward you, a blind woman being led by a yellow lab in a harness. Your mind fills with questions, not the least of which is, am I allowed to pet a dog that's working? The answer to that one is only with permission from his handler and when they've come to a stop. That dog is navigating human and vehicular traffic for a blind person whose life depends on the dog's concentration. Where do those dogs come from? How does a handicapped person get one of those dogs? Who trains those dogs? Happily, there are several organizations dedicated to this work, one being Guiding Eyes for the Blind, and another is Puppies Behind Bars. 15 years ago, Gloria Gilbert Stoga and her husband adopted a yellow lab named Arrow from Guiding Eyes for the Blind. Arrow had been headed toward a life of service to a blind person, but he was being released from the program for medical reasons. In 1997, Gloria was working for New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani on a mayoral commission helping find paying summer employment for inner-city kids. But Gloria had become aware of an innovative program begun by a veterinarian in Gainesville, Florida, Dr. Thomas Lane. The program was training prison inmates, both men and women, to do the initial raising and training of young dogs destined to become guide or rescue dogs. That win-win idea wouldn't let go of Gloria, and before long, she quit the mayor's office, began doing research, visiting prisons where the program was already working, and finally began talking with New York's commissioner of the Department of Correctional Services, Glenn Gord. So somehow, Arrow had pointed the way to the founding of Puppies Behind Bars. Forgive the pun. And today, the program is active in 6 prisons, 4 in New York State. Puppies Behind Bars is privately funded. It functions at no cost to taxpayers and offers additional opportunities to participating inmates, including diplomas in dog grooming and veterinary assistance. And here with the rest of this win-win story is Kathy Golden with the president of Puppies Behind Bars, Gloria Stoga.
Where do you go to select dogs? How do you go
we
about...
We raise 2 kinds of dogs, guide dog puppies and explosive detection canines. Guide dog puppies, we work with Guiding Eyes for the Blind. It's a guide dog school in Yorktown Heights, New York. And they loan us puppies to raise. Explosive detection canines, we buy from breeders. Both puppies we put into prisons. They stay in prison for 12 to 14 months. We go into each of the 6 prisons that we're in 1 full day a week. We conduct classes. We work with the inmates. We see how the puppies are doing. It's a full curriculum.
Is there a genetic difference between the 2 types of dogs?
Guide dog puppies are bred for confidence. The most important characteristic for a guide dog to have is confidence. So that's what they're primarily looking for. For explosive detection canines, we're looking for dogs that have a higher energy level than guide dogs. We're looking for dogs that are going to be comfortable jumping, going under cars, going in dark spaces, that are going to use their noses to sniff guide dogs, you don't want them to sniff when they're walking down the street. Mm-hmm. Explosive detection canines, you do want to sniff. So yes, we're looking for different characteristics in the two types of dogs.
Now, how do you select prisoners? I mean, there's got to be a vetting process there, I'm sure.
There is. Puppy Span Bars has criteria. An inmate who's interested in being in the program will write a letter expressing his or her interest to whomever the liaison is in the prison. The prison will screen the inmates. If they pass that screening process, Puppies Behind Bars will be given their names, and we will conduct interviews with each inmate and decide whether or not to let him or her in the program. Once they're accepted in the program, there's a 3-page contract they have to sign, which clearly stipulates what's expected of them. And the first 90 days are a probationary period.
Mm-hmm.
Inmates can get kicked out of the program any time they're in it, but those first 90 days, you're not fully accepted in the program
yet.
We're testing you.
The person who wants to possibly raise a dog has to have at least 2 years left on their sentence. Mm-hmm.
Because it takes 12 to 14 months to raise a dog. We prefer to work with inmates who have very long sentences so that they can raise dog after dog. We put a lot into training these inmates. We have developed a full course and it takes 18 months. So if we've trained somebody for 18 months, we'd really like them to be able to raise more than one dog.
Does the fact that there's another dog coming down the pike also make it easier for them to give up mm-hmm. the dog each and every time they have
it
to do
does,
that?
It does, but more importantly is the fact that they've succeeded at something. Even if they were only given one dog to raise, I think they would do so enthusiastically because it's their way of contributing to society. It's their way of proving they can do something right. So yes, the fact that they can get another puppy eases some of the pain of the puppy's departure, but the pride in the dog and the pride in themselves goes much farther in easing the pain.
Do they get to know down the road where the dog went, who it's with, what's
no.
happening?
They know if the dog graduated as an explosive detection canine. They know if the dog graduated as a guide dog. If it's an explosive detection canine, we'll tell them the state the dog's working in or maybe the agency that the dog is working for. If it's a guide dog, there's complete anonymity and they won't know. They'll just know their dog's a guide dog. If the guide dog user wants to stay in touch with us, we love it. We've had a number of guide dog users come into prisons with the dogs we raised as puppies, and they're now working guide dogs. We've also had NYPD bomb squad come into prisons with some of our dogs that we raised, and they're now bomb sniffing dogs. So it's wonderful when people do want to stay in touch, but that's totally up to them. It's not expected.
Have you been able to keep track of graduates on both human and dog side?
No, I used to. I used to know every doggy's birthday. And then as we got bigger, I don't. So no, I can't say that I can keep track of all.
I can understand. Can you tell me the changes you've seen in the prisoners who've been doing the raising?
The inmates have become softer and kinder. They feel that they can display emotion. They feel better about themselves. They feel that they've got a reason to get up in the morning. They feel that they can succeed at something. They feel that something loves them unconditionally, and they've got something to love. And they've got something to be responsible for other than themselves. The inmates will all tell you that prior to being in Puppies Behind Bars, they'd get up in the morning and they'd go shower and they'd go to breakfast and they'd get ready for work. And now the first thing they do is take their puppy out to go to the bathroom and they feed their puppy first. And then they say, oh my gosh, I'm running late. I have to hurry up and jump in the shower. But it's not me, me, me anymore. Prison teaches you to shut down emotionally. Prison teaches you to stay by yourself. Puppies Behind Bars allows them to open up emotionally, and we force them to work together as a team, helping each other out with dogs. So there's a camaraderie that develops, and there's a safety that develops.
So how do you feel at the end of the day? You started this.
I feel exhilarated. It's rewarding to work with people who want to do something positive instead of just sitting around watching TV, which they could certainly be doing if they wanted. We turn out excellent dogs. In 2004, 87% of our dogs tested by guide dog schools to see if they could go on, be accepted in professional training, pass their tests, and 96% of our dogs passed their bomb sniffing tests. So we turn out excellent dogs, but the challenge of Puppies Behind Bars is to teach an inmate that A, they can do it, B, they've got to work with somebody next to them. They've got to share their dog, they've got to help somebody out, and that they've got to maintain the high standards that we expect. That's what's challenging.
Thank you very much for being with us today on Voices of Our World, Gloria Gilbert Stoga.
If you go to the Puppies Behind Bars website, www.puppiesbehindbars.com, you can watch a quick video of just one of the organization's win-win stories. You'll meet Willie, a man whose life was desperately diminished when he lost his sight. Vincent, a prison inmate whose life was uplifted by the chance to succeed at a task that would link these two men. And Victoria, the black female Labrador retriever whose devotion helped save both men. Today, Susan Hallett works for a nonprofit legal action center, helping people with criminal records re-enter society through employment. But not so long ago, Susan was an inmate herself at Bedford Hills Correctional Facility. Bedford is no camp cupcake, and Susan spent 27 years there. She worked while inside, but then along came an additional chance to prove herself. Susan became a volunteer puppy raiser for PBB. So from her first charge, Noah, to Chloe, to the pale blonde devil child, Thornton, who Susan says knew her last nerve, Susan rewarded the trust placed in her and certainly helped the people who eventually received Noah, Chloe, and even Thornton. Here's Susan.
You can use the time while you're incarcerated for good or for bad. And if you're smart, you use it to change yourself, to grow, to become a smarter person. And everyone has the capacity to change. And having served so many years and seen so many people there, I saw people who went from when they first came in, from a person who you ran away from because you just knew they were bound for no good, to someone who is a really a loving, caring, educated adult. I've seen the possibility of change. I think it's easier for society to accept female prisoners or ex-prisoners back because we are perceived as being less threatening. At Bedford, my experience was that women tend to do what women do. Women nest. They have a nice room. They make a nice place. Or they create their home. They take the younger kids that come in under their wing and kind of make sure that they're taken care of. And I know people probably have a hard time believing this, but the thing that people want the most when they're released is they want to work. They want to get a job. They want to be able to earn a living to show their kids that they can be responsible. I think 80% of the women are mothers, and they just want a chance to make up for all the mistakes that they made. And they see employment as one of the ways of doing that. I currently work with the program, a not-for-profit law firm in Manhattan, and one of the areas that we work in, helping individuals with criminal records re-enter through employment. And I had a guy call, and he had 11 or 12 years ago had, I think it was a misdemeanor conviction. And he said, you know, he said, I'm a manual laborer. He said, I need a second job because my first job just doesn't provide enough money. He said, all I want to do is be able to feed my kids. And I just knew how he felt. He was willing to go out and get two jobs doing manual labor just to put food on the table. And that's what people want. There's that goodness in people. And it kind of all goes into why the Puppies Behind Bars program works so well. I don't want
a bowl of little fishes. Got a win-win story in your own life or in your community you can share with us? Email us. Go to www.marynoel.org/voices. Just click on Contact Us or call us at 877-MARY-KNOWL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. You're listening to Voices of Our World. I do hope that doggy's for sale.